our main speaker tonight. So 24 years ago, 22 years ago, something like that, I came up here sober. I had a sponsor, Barry W., and went to the Orchid meeting. And Luke was one of the first people that walked up and said, you know, hi. So I'm really excited to have you folks hear him speak tonight. So come on up, Luke, and let's hear your story.
It's my job to blow it. Wow. My name's Luke. I'm an alcoholic. And, wow. Let me see. First of all, I'd like to thank Derek for inviting me to come and share tonight. You know, it's an honor and a privilege to be able to share in Alcoholics Anonymous and to give back what's been so freely given to me. You know, I was sitting over here and I saw these two cats back here, Bill and Bob, and I'd like to say thank Bill and Bob, you know. Divine intervention in their lives, divine intervention in my life. You know, I'm here, I believe, because of divine intervention. I believe that there was a moment where I asked for help from God, and I got that help. It was that voice of desperation and helplessness and hopelessness, you know, and I don't know how other people get here and whether you ever identify why or how, but I really believe that it was, you know, the end of a 7.5-year relapse, and it was a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week relapse, I should start at the beginning, but just try and follow me wherever I go. I'm kind of like that. You know, you just never know what you're going to get. So, and it was after a 7.5-year relapse, and you know, I'd been homeless and unemployable for a couple of years, and I had a girlfriend, and I was living in Santa Rosa, California, and I still had this El Camino, and I thought it would be a good idea if I painted it. Her parents were out on vacation for like 3 weeks, and so we house sat, and they didn't know we were house sitting. I decided to paint my car in their garage with rattle can, you know, some of that high quality PPG stuff. So, you know, and anyway, made a long story short, you know, I was working on that car and something broke, and it was like the last straw. It was like, you know, the last straw. And I remember I just walked into the house and I hit my knees and I said, God, I just can't do this anymore. You know, and it was like tears were coming, and, you know, and this was like in November. You know, it was right before Thanksgiving, and I hadn't been home in a couple of years for Thanksgiving, and, you know, you know, so I, a series of events started to happen after that, you know. I talked to my folks, and they said, come home, and I said, I can't come home, I got no money to come home, you know. And they said, okay, we'll send you some money. You know, so they sent me some money to get home. And first thing I did was go and buy some more. You know, I do outside substances, and you're going to hear about that in my story. And I did a lot of them. And so first thing I did is I went and bought some drugs. I went and bought maybe a bowl of crank and... And they had sent me $500, and so I went and did that. And then, you know, I had like 3 or 4 days to get home, and So I tidied everything up around the car and everything else. And I remember, you know, I was pretty much like out right before I was leaving. I didn't have nothing left again. And it was like, I don't know, it took me 15 hours to drive from Santa Rosa to Santa Maria. I would drive and I'd have to pull over and I'd fall asleep, you know, and I got home, my car was on E, my oil light was on, you know, and I just barely made it into the driveway. And really, I believe that's how God worked. He gave me just enough to get me home. And my life changed, you know, from that point forward. It wasn't the last day I used, but it was, I used a Saturday after Thanksgiving. And that's my sobriety date, November 27th of 1994. You know, I came home and I stayed home for like a week. And my dad said, "You got to go. You can't be here anymore." You know, and it was, I think, you know, disheartening, and it hurt him. And I know it did. You know, I'm sure it took years off my dad's life. You know, but the divine intervention and the way that all worked, it was like I could never see it. I saw that and started to notice that in recovery after I had been here a while. You know, when I first got here, like Suzanne said, my first year was crazy. You know, I don't know how long it takes to collect on the money that people were betting against me. But, you know, I'm hoping after my next birthday I might be able to get my first wave of refund. So that would be really cool. And, it was difficult. I was crazy as a loon. You know, I've been doing a lot of meth for years and dealing with, and you know, it was insane. And so, you know, I had to, you know, I detoxed and driving home, I just detoxed at my folks, and then I had worked in a couple of years and I had to start learning how to live and walk straight again and try to do this recovery thing, you know. But that began by, after that Saturday getting loaded, my girlfriend had came down after my dad asked me to leave, and we went to the Econo Lodge that used to be over there on Main Street, which used to be the Motel 6, and we were in the back, and you know, the tweaker section, and I remember coming out of there at like 6 a.m. in the morning, and you know, just like here, standing out on the railing and looking out and seeing, you know, Main Street, and thinking, God, I used to own this town, you know. So you know, I was so beat, but I was still filled with so much ego that, you know, I just had, that was, you know, what they talk about is a moment of clarity where you get this glimpse that I really believe God shares with you if you're ready for it. And God showed me that, you know, it's like either you're going to go sit on somebody's porch, a friend of mine that was still in recovery, you're going to go to his house over to Ray J's, or you're going to go live under a bridge. And if I were to pick up and get loaded again, I really believe that I'm going to a bridge and I'm pushing a cart. Not necessarily that I'm going to go die, nothing like that, no, you know, that I'm going to go to a bridge. That's the best that I can do with my own thinking and the actions that I take related to self. And I don't want to have to do that. So, you know, like we all talk about, and Susie talked about her pitch, is that, you know, I do the deal around here. I do what it takes to stay here. You know, insanity can return in recovery. Just because we work the steps does not mean that all of a sudden, you know, we become healed. You know? And it takes time. You know, so throughout that first year, you know, I mean, I was the crazy guy you'd see walking around the block. yelling and screaming at the top of his lungs. You know, just, I can't do this, I can't do this. I'd have the creepy crawlies and the eebie-jeebies, man. And that was on me for a year. And I would literally have to shake it off, man. And I would be like that. You know, it was terrible. It was terrible. You know, and then I would, walking around that block, and then it'd be like, you know, then I'd say the Lord's Prayer, and I'd say, you know, the Serenity Prayer, and you know, I'd be okay again for a while, you know, and then an hour, half hour later, I'd do the same thing, you know, and it just took time, you know. After I left that hotel, my girlfriend wanted me to go back to Santa Rosa with her. I couldn't go. I told her, no, I ain't going. I got no gas, got no job, I ain't got nothing, you know. It's like, well, where am I going? I got no place to stay. I got nothing. I mean, I can't even make it up there or anything, you know. And so I went over and sat on my friend's porch, and he gave me direction. He'd been sober for 9 years at that point. And he gave me direction if I were to be able to stay at his house. And he offered that to me if I were willing to go to meetings, not get loaded, and find a job. You know, I started to have to take action again and become responsible and accountable for me, for my own actions, and for my inadequacies, and my character defects that I didn't know anything about. You know, and I did that, you know, I said, can I borrow some money, you know, so I can go and look for a job? And he says, no, use the phone book. You know, here I am trying to manipulate it, right? And so I used the phone book, made some calls, and first people said, no, no, we're not interested, you know, and I've been doing my trade at that point for 20 years, you know, and I basically, you know, had to learn my trade all over again. I was so dysfunctional at that point. I couldn't focus, couldn't think, couldn't keep focused, you know. And so I called somebody else in Lompoc, and I went over and talked to them the following day. And they went ahead and hired me, and I got hired on as piecework, and I started working for them. And I did fine, you know. They really didn't know what was going on with me. I really truly didn't tell them everything at first, but they knew something was wrong because the only kind of clothes I had were sweatpants and t-shirts and sweatshirts, and I'd bring my dog with me every day, you know, so it was like, you know, it was kind of crazy. And, you know, I worked for that guy for 6 months, and you know, I did a good job for him, you know, it got to the point to where, you know, I felt like I deserved more money, that kind of thing, and it was, so that became an issue, and I decided to call these other people back here in Santa Maria and talk to them again, and I did, and they said, yeah, come on in and talk to us, and then they hired me, and I was there for 17 years. And, you know, after a year, they asked me to manage, and I was in management there for 11 years. And, you know, and I did really, really good, you know, as far as the career and the work and all that stuff. You know, it seemed like, God, here you are, and now you're in recovery, and your life's taken off, and, you know, I had met someone, you know, and I talk about my wife, and she passed away 7.5 years ago, and I got to walk through that here, and people, and Suzanne was like with me 24/7. She took time off work she stopped her life for my wife and us, to help us get through the passing of my wife. And you don't get that anywhere else, you know. Francine remembers, she was a big part of that. Billy was there, you know. so many people. My house became an AA house, and it was 24/7. It was awake. There was coffee going. There was people there. It was amazing. And the emperor indebted to Alcoholics Anonymous and the people for that. You know, my life is changing a lot currently, and I've been having to let go of a lot of things, emotionally, mentally, physically, financially. Not really financially, but materialistically. I just let my house go in at the end of December, before the first of the year, so I'm now living with Suzanne. And, you know, I was living in Pam, and I lived in that house. Let me talk about Pam a little bit, just to bring you up to date with that, or to give you a little backfill on that. In my first year, I was living with Ray J, and Ray J had a girlfriend. Her name was Dee, and Dee and Pam were friends, and so, you know, Pam would come over, and she was going to leave her husband. I don't know what I get myself into. But, you know, so here's this, you know, Hollywood beautiful woman that just rocked me, right? And anyway, she left her husband, and a couple months after that, we got together. And shortly after that, I moved in because Ray J kicked me out. He said, sure, you got to go. You know, and that was my story. You know, no matter where I went, no matter what I was doing, it was like, you got to go. You know what I mean? And so anyway, you know, Pam and I, we started living together. And Susie was living with us initially back then, because Susie and Pam were best friends, and their daughters. Pam's daughter, Lauren, has become my daughter. I've been part of her life since she was 8, 9 years old. She's 28, going to be 29, just like Danielle. They were like the two AA kids that would run around the room. But anyway, and Pam and I had a great, great life. We got married. I had 2 years of sobriety, and I got married, and my life took off, you know, with my work and in recovery, and, you know, bought a home. And, you know, things was really good, really good. And you know, we were together for 13 years, you know, throughout my recovery. And I say this all the time because I got to give, you know, credit and props to the people that were so important and vital in my recovery, and Pam and Suzanne and Ray J were the people that really saved my life. You know, these people saved my life, man. And so, you know, there's always that gratitude and that thankfulness that we have for one another, and that common bond. That, you know, hey, I'm here for you, man. You know, I'm here for you, and. And so anyway, that's kind of like the background with Pam, and she passed away, you know. She had 33 years of sobriety when she passed away. You know, she was older than I was, but, you know, I loved her and she loved me. And I never had it so good, you know what I mean? And I got the opportunity to be a husband, and I got the opportunity to be a dad. I got the opportunity to become a human being in Alcoholics Anonymous and to participate in life and all the things that I was missing out on. You know, I was taught that consistency and discipline is important and vital, and, you know, one of the most important things that we have to maintain in our recovery. Because we get time, we get days, we get bad feelings, we get bad days, we have hard days at work, we're tired, you know, the kids got a game, the kids, you know, got to do this, I got to go here, I got to do that. Next thing you know, we stop going to meetings, we stop showing up. And And, you know, I'm one of those people that I just can't allow that stuff. You know, certainly I have to meet my obligations. I have to do all those things. I have to be responsible, but I can't stay away from Alcoholics Anonymous and not give back to what's been freely given to me. I look at all you people in this room, and you're 12-stepping me by being here. You know, you guys have done so much for me. Freely. You guys haven't asked a dime, a penny, anything. You've allowed me to become the man that you see up here by your teachings and by your help. You know, by the 12 steps of recovery that truly have changed my life. You know, I've learned that I'm powerless over people, places, and things. I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol. And it makes my life unmanageable if I try to get in there and control and think myself through it. You know, my sponsor, Stevie, always tells me, you know, best I could do, I'm a self-made failure, you know. I'm a self-made failure, you know. You know, they say, oh, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it's like a brainwashing place. Well, your brain needs washing. You know, so, I mean, I love that man. And he's taught me so much because of the way he walks. Not only the way he talks, but the way he walks. You know, I'm a watcher, and I get to watch people in recovery come in, go out, come in, stay, you know, whatever. But I think when you have length of time, you become aware of people and watch them and see their lives change, hopefully. You know, Mark's here, and, you know, these are the JJ and Bradley, and, you know, these people, Jimmy and Johnny, Jimmy, anyway, and... you know, and we get to see people's lives change here, you know, and it's an awesome thing, you know, it's an awesome thing to see the lights come on and to see this ray of hope and their lives change and their relationships start to mend and their family life start to change and start to mend and new relationships begin, you know, at work and with friends and community and all these different things. All of the things that my drug addiction and alcoholism took away from me. My alcoholism and drug addiction took me to living in an attic. I lived in an attic for 6 to 9 months. And I'd take my dog up there in the attic with me, and it was a nice attic. I had it all fixed up. You know, I got busy up there. And I would have stayed up there forever if I had enough shit. I would have never come down. You know? I never had a problem with drugs and alcohol until I didn't have any drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. Never had any problem with drugs and alcohol until I didn't have any drugs and alcohol. Now what do I do? You know, and dealing with Luke and his feelings and his emotions and everything, all the guilt, all the shame, all the remorse, all the anger and resentment. How do we deal and process all this stuff? How do we get the insane behavior and thinking out of our minds? You know, and the steps helped me with all that. You know, I stopped walking around the block yelling and screaming at the top of my lungs because somebody called me on it and said, you can't do that anymore. You're freaking people out. You're going to hurt somebody and they're figuring out a way to take you down. And that got my attention. But until somebody called me on my stuff, I wasn't willing to change because it was still working. You know, that feeling of being able to intimidate, put fear in people is still there. And today that's not okay. It's not okay. It's not who I am. It's not what I want to be. It's not anything that I ever want to have to be like again. You know, and I don't have to be if I stay spiritually fit. You know, and then, you know, when I turned my will and my life over to the care of God, it was a huge thing because I wasn't raised in church. I wasn't ever really exposed other than one time I had a girlfriend, I think, when I was 17. And she took me to church and a couple times. And, you know, at that point, I already had a problem. I was, you know, getting high every day. You know, so I didn't really have a problem like a lot of people that have to rethink their religious beliefs or rethink God in general. It came easier to me, but it took me a while to get there because I didn't believe I would stay that whole first year. I didn't think I was going to stay. I didn't think I was going to make it. Every day was just dress up and show up, bring the body, and the feelings will follow. You know, all the things that Pam would say, just get there. You'll be fine. You know, just dress up and show up. You know, my boss would ask me, how you doing today? He'd come, this is, and he really did this. And he would, I'd be sitting here working at my bench, and he'd come walk over, and he'd stand over here like this, and he'd kind of just look at me and read me. You know what I mean? He says, how's you doing today? How's your psyche? Are the planets and the moon the one just right? Are you okay? And I'd look at him like, yeah, I'm all right. You know, true story. You know, so I didn't have that difficulty with really. It just had to be shown. I had to see that for myself that one, I was staying sober. Two, that my actions and my behaviors were starting to change and I was being restored to sanity. See? And so I became willing to take that third step. And I became willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And at that point, I was filled with all that stuff still, right? Because I hadn't cleaned house. I hadn't done that stuff. And I got to the point, you know, where I realized that God loved me enough and cared enough to bring me to Alcoholics Anonymous and give me the opportunity to be clean and sober and kept me alive through all of it. Now, I've been run over by cars. I've missed airplanes that have crashed. I've been rolled and submerged in ponds in a vehicle. I've totaled other vehicles. I've had guns pulled on me. I should not be standing in front of you if there wasn't a greater power that somehow, even if I don't understand it, that I could start to believe in. And so I made that decision to believe and to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Because they loved me enough. Right? But what it did was made me realize that God loved me enough, accepted me for all the things that I had done, all the hurt, all the pain I had caused. And now, everything from this point forward, if it truly means that I turn my life and care over my life, turn my life, you know, over to the care of God, you know, right there. And it took away any excuses for me to get loaded anymore. Because there was something here for me to learn. that there was, it's all necessary for my spiritual growth. If I want to become and grow more in that likeness of a loving creator, then I have to act like that. Then I got to walk like that. And certainly I don't walk like that and act like that all the time. But I'm not a saint and I'm not perfect, you know, and it's progress, not perfection. I'm a human being. And I had my faults. And so, you know, I did that. And God has been, in that, has been the most important thing, other than, you know, obviously having worked the rest of the steps, but God and step 11 and is, you know, so much the largest part of my program, because it's where the answers have come from and where the answers are for me. And I'm totally grateful to know that today, that I'll be okay no matter what if I don't get loaded. I'll be okay. I just need to get to the other side. When my wife was passing, I was in like a vacuum of time. I was everything you talk about, living in the now. I was in the now all the time for that entire period. Need something from the start? Yeah. Need it? Yeah. In the now. Pam needs something? Okay. Let's do this. Let's do that. And I forgot where I was going. And anyway, Pam, in a vacuum of time, I lost my train of thought on that.
You're talking so, about in the now.
Yeah, and in the now, boy.
Working the steps sober.
Yeah, you know, I'm with all that. What are you taking? yeah, but so anyway, you know, it was like a vacuum of time and I was stuck, you know, and everything went so slow and everything took, you know, that nothing else mattered other than being in the present, you know, and when it gets down to the insanity of everything, insanity returns in recovery, it's like, Pam used to say this to me when in the kitchen, I'd be pacing, you know, because I'd have anxiety and fear of financial stuff or whatever, and she'd say, stop, look around, mm-hmm. And I would stop, and I would just look around, and she'd go, you're fine, and I go, yeah, I'm fine. See, my mind is always out to give me, and yeah, I wrote this down today because I'm going through some other changes in my life right now. And you know, it's all necessary, so it's good. And I'm grateful that I've gotten to be a participant. But what I wrote was freedom. Freedom is contrary to that. I have freedom when contrary to that. I'll paraphrase it somehow. Freedom is contrary to. If I'm willing to take the actions contrary to my fears, whatever it was. But it was really cool, and I thought it was so cool, I wanted to remember it and share it, right? Because it was like, oh, God, man, it could be a slogan in here, you know? Right? All about me, right? Hey, I want to look good now, right there. Oh, new growth, that, you know. Oh, yeah. I'm sick, but, you know. And that's cool. you know, I can be sick and have a good time and be sober, you know. But you know, and there were things on my four step that I wrote out and that I didn't want to put on paper. You know, I had statute of limitations and things that were still out there on me, and it's not that it was all that bad, but it could have got me put away for some time. You know, so I guess it was kind of bad, you know. I mean, there's me justifying my actions one more time, right? I got 19 years of sobriety. It's all good, man. Wasn't that bad? I say that to Pam. She goes, "Are you fucking crazy?" I'm sorry about cussing, but it was apropos for that it would be my wife. You know, so, and, yeah, I mean, it was a lot of crazy stuff, and so I did that fourth step, and my sponsor would say, write it down. I'm not writing it down, because then once it's written down, somebody could bust me or something, you know. Really, I mean, you know, I never got caught for a lot of the stuff I did, and I was out there until I was 36 doing it. And almost 37, and he'd say, write it down, you big chicken, and some other words, and I sat at his kitchen table, and I got it out, and what it did is it finally got that, the guilt, the shame, the remorse, the resentment, the fears, all that stuff, the sex, all stuff. I got it down on paper and it was no longer stuck inside me. It was now there and it was out. And now we could deal with this because it was no longer inside. It was out. And it was, you know, it was honesty. You know, one more time I had done the deal. I'd worked another step, you know, and it was huge. It was huge. You know, I got up and we did that fifth step and we took a drive. Alan and I took a drive and I remember I said, Alan, am I done with my fifth step, man? And he goes, yeah. And I could just feel myself just whoom. And I walked tall and I was like, yeah. And I was jumping and I was happy, man. You know, I mean, really, really. Such a burden lifted off of me. And, you know, I didn't realize that that was so heavy on me. I didn't realize I was carrying that since I was 14 years old. Since really the first time I got drunk. Probably longer than that, but my first drunk, I was 14. I blacked out. I puked on the side of my friend's car. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, they dropped me off at some girl's house. It was terrible. I didn't know what to do. I was 14. All right. And so, you know, I mean, it was good, though. Because, you know, then I could deal with the guilt and the shame. I could deal with making amends, you know. I could see what my character defects were. And we listed all those things. We put them on paper. I did the video. I got quiet, went by myself, went to a church, you know, sat out there, went inside, you know, asked God to take all these things. And, you know, just follow direction. And the reason I'm really doing all this stuff, you know, is because a guy, Roger, he knew me from the first time I was here. I got here in 86 and I didn't stay, you know. And he said, make a commitment to work all 12 steps, and if you want to get loaded, you know, okay, let's see what happens, you know. And I took that to heart. You know, and before I had done that four steps, it was 4 or 5 years, and I hadn't done it. I don't suggest that for anybody, but it's part of my story. You know, my dad had just passed away, and that was difficult, and I made it through that because of all you people in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I got it done. You know, I got the fourth, and you know, I got it done again. you know, I did one more step, and you know, I'm bouncing around because I just am, but Roger made me, you know, said make the commitment. I made the commitment. I worked all 12 steps. I'm still here. I found out I didn't want to go back to that way of life. You know, there was nothing there. It was an illusion. It was an illusion that there was something there. There was no life. You know, I get to live life and participate and function in society today. I'm not alienated. I'm not isolated. You know, I get to continue to take personal inventory. I get to do all these things. You know, everybody says, I gotta do this, I gotta do that. You ain't gotta do shit. You get to do it. It's your choice. No one's sitting here pushing it down your throat. You don't want to do it, don't do it. See what it gets you. See if you like the results. You know, I like the results produced by the 12 steps. Yeah. That's what keeps driving me, is that I know that when I'm in emotional pain or any other things that are going on really in my life, if I apply the principles and I apply the steps to issues in areas in my life, that there is a solution today, you know, that has been given to me through people, God, prayer. Those answers come. Situations happen that, you know, you would think couldn't happen, do. You know, the seemingly bad as well as the seemingly good, you know, Al always used to tell us, and that's so true. You know, it's not necessarily without pain. But the pain is temporary because the body has a way and the mind has a way of healing itself in that area. But when we get to the other side, there's usually that spiritual gift and we know what the lesson has been. And I've been able to, you know, always know that that vacuum of time is just temporary. You know, there's times in recovery where it's like, you know, you've been here this long. You've been here this long. And now you're in this moment of time right here and you're stuck. And you just want to quit and you want to run and you want to check out, you know. But you don't realize you've come that far and you're willing to give it up for this much time. Because our thinking, the disease centers in our mind, and then no matter how much time we get, it will still kill us. It will still. This is a fatal disease. It doesn't mean that we will drink. It might say we'll take a gun and put it in our mouth. And it has happened. I have seen a person blow his chest out. Now, I haven't seen it, but he has blown his chest out. I know other people that just, you know, OD. I know people that drink themselves to death. You know, it's not a beautiful thing. It's not a beautiful thing to see active alcoholism reoccur in people's lives. You know, we all say, huh, yeah, God, isn't that sad? And we all say, you know, well, you know, that's alcoholism. Yeah, and we all identify with that. We have compassion for it. But the reality, I mean, because I have to keep this tweak's mind, I don't know what your mind is, but I've got to stay spiritually fit and I got to be doing the deal to be in this so I don't get into that state of mind. To where my thinking doesn't revert back to where I start unworking these 12 steps, where God isn't important, where I stop working with people, where prayer and meditation isn't part of my daily routine, you know, where I don't take an inventory and make amends to people where I've wronged them, you know, to correct my ways, you know. I don't give a shit about anybody. You know, I don't care about you. Oh, well, I hurt you. Too bad. God, you know, okay, I'm crazy. Yeah, they used to call me Crazy Luke. Sure, no problem. I can deal with that. Yeah, I'm a drug addict. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, I know. So what? What's changed? I'm right back to where I was. And that's not when, you know, you want to be around me. And you're going to say one more time, you got to go. You got to go, you know. I haven't spoke since some of these changes since the first of the year, and you know my pitch always changes, because like we read, you know, it's through application that this works, and I believe that for me, that my life and my recovery is going to be ongoing and changing. It's not just going to be the way it was 20 years ago when I got here. You know, I don't believe that for me. You know, some people got their pat down, you know, because it's funny, because it's, and it's like, yeah, that's real good, man, great. But what about today? How are you doing it today? You know, this is a day at a time program. This wasn't a yesterday program, you know? We're all sober today because of what we did today, not because of what we did yesterday or 10 years ago. Certainly what we did, we got experience from. And it provides us maybe with a little insurance, but there's no guarantee. You can't go and buy it, you know? You got to do this deal daily, you know? I'm here daily, or, you know, I have my commitment meetings, I have my disciplines, and I go, and people know where to find me. I'm going to be at that Orchid Tuesday night meeting at 8 o'clock every Tuesday. I've been doing that for 19 years. I'm going. The ebb and flow of that meeting, I don't care. I'm sitting there. You know why? Because somebody was sitting there for me. I remember all the old guys, you know, the old timers that were there, some of them frequent, but a lot of them don't come, and a lot of them just have passed on and gone to the big meeting in the sky. You know what I mean? You know, I love this program. I love it. I love this program. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, yeah, we're a little off. We're bodily and mentally different from our fellows. We are. We have an allergy to drugs and alcohol. We have that allergy. Our disease centers in the mind. We can't clean up our thinking with our thinking. We have to have a power greater than ourselves that helps us to restore ourselves to right thinking. When we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, we one more time become empowered by that force, by that God, by that higher power, by whatever you want to call it, to have enough strength to do it on a daily basis, and the tools to do it on a daily basis. You know, there's Alcoholics Anonymous, you can be anything you want to be in Alcoholics Anonymous except the president. Okay? Yeah. You can be of service at any level that you choose to be if you're willing to work for it. If you like working at area levels, group levels, or just anonymously in the background and just showing up to a meeting 12-stepping, that's awesome. Working one-on-one with somebody, you know, sponsoring, you know, get out there and do the deal. You know, it will truly, truly save your life and give you a life beyond your wildest dreams. Thanks for letting me share.
Another round of applause.